Can you guys hear me? Yeah, okay. Special thanks to Joan for that lovely introduction. Chris, Don, Scott, and to everyone for coming out to this brewery slash sauna for the evening. This is the true story behind the essay that I'm going to read. Don't record this. This is true. A couple years ago, someone from the Smithsonian reached out to me, and they said, "Robert, we are putting together a exhibit on voices of the Asian diaspora. Can you contribute something?" And I said, "Wow, what an honor. Absolutely." So I wrote this essay specifically for them. It's the most personal thing that I've ever written. It was about being adopted from South Korea, being Asian during the pandemic. It was raw and vulnerable. And I sent it off to them and I said, you know, again, thank you. This is such a great honor. And they wrote back and said, "No, thank you." And I don't even think they said thank you. But jokes on them, because as many of you know, part of being a writer is being emotionally battered and gaslit. I revised it, you know, and it got better, and a wonderful journal accepted it, and I'm going to read part of it for you guys tonight. So pages 1 through 6 are wonderful. You'll just have to imagine them. It's about a family secret, again, being adopted, and epiphanies. And I'm going to read you pages 7 through 10. And I'm just going to jump right into it. "Beyond my face, I'm the standard issue Asian American in some ways. In others, I'm an outlier. I was one of 3 at my high school, which canceled class the first day of hunting season. Chin in hand, I watched a grazing herd of cattle every morning from my homeroom windows. My experience as a factory laborer has shaped all of my creative output, ditto with being an underpaid educator in Pittsburgh. So far, most Asian literary organizations aggressively ignore my books, along with everyone else. I tell myself it's because unfamiliar narratives aren't easy. Even so, there's a pleasure in being unexpected. Did I mention I currently live in West Virginia? I moved there in August 2020. I heard somewhere that our state is the least diverse in the nation. That's probably true, but there are more brown people there than you'd expect, and way more rainbow flags. Sometimes, when people ask me what it's like to live in West Virginia, they're really asking, aren't you tired of fleeing from banjo-wielding racists? And, well, the state isn't exactly a hotbed of tolerance, but then again, neither is anywhere. Since the demographics there, skew so white and old, Asians are mostly an abstraction. My presence seems more bemusing than triggering. Through a rare miracle of competence from the state government, I got the vaccine before you did. That, plus low population density, equals shelter from both the pandemic and hate crimes. In 2020, when performing yard work or exercising outside my parents' home in Pennsylvania, I wore sunglasses and a baseball hat pulled low. I always have. But now I was looking stylish and hiding my most Asian features. 4 decades prior, my parents decided to give me an American name to deflect the bullying that inevitably accompanied a foreign one. 2020 felt like a full circle moment. So much progress was lost in a wave of anti-Asian hate, but at least I could return the favor and help keep my parents safe. Any discomfort about hiding melted away before the mental image of my parents' brand new home being firebombed. When I teach creative writing, I occasionally quote V.S. Pritchett's warning about the overuse of symbols, which can offer the quick return of unearned meaning. However, in the fall of 2021, I started thinking about earning a little differently. After driving a long stretch on 68, I parked at a rest stop in Maryland. It was dark out, and as I exited my car and walked up the narrow asphalt road toward the restrooms, there was a rush of footsteps. The crazed, slappy sound of rubber soles on asphalt startled me more than the threat of violence. I fled the road, stumbling to safety between two parked cars. From the sound, louder than ever, there should have been a mob, but I only saw a neat row of cars across the road and the empty SUVs next to me. Above was a cloudless sky and a bright sliver of moon. I slowed my breathing, crouched, and quieted the animal part of my brain. I scanned the area again and spotted the pole before following it up. The sound was an American flag flapping madly in the wind. When the pandemic ended for the third time, I visited my favorite Chinese restaurant in Pittsburgh. It's actually within walking distance here. It's in Bloomfield. China Palace? The one down on Liberty, close to the BBT, where the BBT used to be. Anyway, I hadn't lived in the city since 2016, but the woman behind the counter recognized me and confirmed my usual order. As I waited, I noticed none of the workers were masked, and yet they hadn't removed the decidedly improvised fiberboard and plexiglass barrier that spanned the length of the counter. As ugly as it looked, I suddenly realized it might buy the cooks and cashiers a few seconds to flee if someone leapt over the counter. I thought, maybe I'm projecting. I caught my reflection in the plexiglass and thought about distances, distinctions, and who gets to determine them. Behind my reflection, a bell jingled, and a man in a gray hoodie lurched across the doorway before heading toward us, head lowered slightly like a bull. While helping my parents move, I unearthed my old Korean language lesson notebooks, doodles and all. I'm studying the language again, partly because the South Korean government allows adoptees to reclaim their citizenship. And speaking the language would be useful if I go through with it. I've been fantasizing more and more about emigrating. I can't imagine conditions improving for someone who looks like me, especially as tensions rise between America and China. If I'm murdered as a Korean citizen in Korea, at least it will be for a more interesting reason than existing, turning around in the wrong driveway, or working at a school. Perhaps Korea and its 5 millennia of history would rush in to fill some inchoate void as my flight began its descent, the overhead bins rattling and the cabin lights popping like flashbulbs. Or maybe, once I landed, my mind would be blown in slow motion through cultural osmosis or acclimation. I worry this fantasy provides the same nourishment as pop culture ephemera, toddy vapors and empty calories. The truth is, my family and career are here in America. It's hard to picture things getting so bad that fleeing the country becomes a pragmatic response instead of a panicked surrender. For the record, I wrote this 2 years ago. Things are different now, but in the cold light of reality, the hard work begins. How does one figure a way forward? I've been thinking that the same qualities that kill writers might save some of us in the near future. A heightened, sharpened sense of observation for one, willingness to consider multiple narratives, curiosity and a curiosity about one's curiosity, and openness that carries through discomfort. While babysitting my nieces in Northern Virginia, we like to visit the beach, which is actually a volleyball court nestled in the neighborhood park. After unpacking the stroller and refilling their water bottles, the girls toddled forth in their swimsuits, carrying plastic buckets and shovels. The sand was damp, perhaps from yesterday's rain. For some reason, wasps crisscrossed the court in low flight paths. The more you looked, the more you saw. As we stood contemplating this, a skinny Caucasian man in a floppy-brimmed hat waved from the walking path behind us. He was pushing a stroller with a baby hidden behind a thick sunshade. As my nieces packed up their beach toys, the man and I chatted. I'm not sure how the topic came up, but he mentioned his Korean wife. I braced myself, but instead of veering down an awkward path, the conversation turned to language. Turns out he'd taught in Seoul and developed near fluency. I said I was working on it, that acquiring a second language as an adult is a humbling experience. Here's a trick, he said, crouching down to draw a character in the sand. Hangul is little diagrams. Some of them correspond with tongue placement. So if you make the na sound in, so this is the Korean alphabet, it looks like a uppercase L. So that's the na sound. So if you make the na sound, the tip of your tongue touches the roof of your mouth. In other words, the character is a diagram for tongue placement. So the Korean letter M looks like a square, and that represents your mouth being closed. In Korean camp, I'd learned about King Sejong and his celebrated supremely logical alphabet, but I'd never heard of the tongue diagrams. I said I was a little shocked by that. Many of his native speaker friends in Korea hadn't known either. He didn't exactly phrase it this way, but he supposed that after a while, some things become invisible unless you're an outsider. I nodded. It wasn't just an ancient secret uncovered during an unexpected language lesson, but how it was delivered by a stranger who materialized out of nowhere during a plague year. The event itself was surprising, but it's fair to say the combination of circumstances blew my mind a little. I'm grasping towards something as this essay draws to a close. I'm clinging to notions about openness and language and survival and possibilities branching out before us. They've declared the plague over. New stories churn in the debris it left behind. My ancient Victorian home in West Virginia settles into the earth as landscapers break ground outside my parents' house. While I have no idea what the future holds as our national fever breaks, I'll leave you with one final miraculous fact. When the universe decides to teach you something, it finds a way to make it stick. Thank you.